problem solve quickly, and also, you know, provide a collaborative environment. I feel like is something that, especially in nuclear engineering, like we definitely value every single person's opinion.
Welcome to another edition of the Columbia University Sports Podcast, The Cusp Show, where we talk about the business of sports, media, leadership, innovation, all different kinds of things. I'm Joe Favorito here on the last day, the first day of summer 2024. As it is the beginning of summer, my co-host Tom Richardson is off doing summerish things. So our able-bodied producer, student, Wasserman intern, that's where you are, Wasserman intern?
No, Harris Blitzer.
Harris Blitzer email, same thing. Mike Schroeder is sitting in today. So Mike, welcome back.
Thanks, Joe. Always a pleasure. It's good to see you, obviously, on this format. Obviously, I still love producing anyway, and, you know, hope Tom's enjoying the summer day off today, I guess, and, you know, back at it again, interviewing some students. So I'm excited, and, you know, let's get it rolling.
So, Mike, why don't you tell us about what you're doing this summer? How's your internship going?
So I'm working in premium sales and ticket sales for the New Jersey Devils and Prudential Center.
So as we're apt to do from time to time, we have some of our students who have various and divergent backgrounds join us, talk about their career journey and kind of how they got here. But today is a little bit different because we have a former Division I Patriot League lacrosse player who also happened to go through a particular branch of the U.S. military, having been at the U.S. Naval Academy. And I want to talk a little bit about leadership and the goals of what the academy brings to the workforce, which is sometimes underappreciated, I would say, especially when you combine that with athletics. So Mike, why don't you do a little intro and then we'll have Taylor kind of lead us through his career path and we'll throw him around a little bit.
Yeah. So our guest today, he'll introduce himself in a minute, is Taylor Azoldi. He is from, now he's here in New York, so he's kind of been all over the place. So,
Mike, why don't you let Taylor tell his story versus you telling it? That would be a good idea.
There we go. Let's let Taylor tell it.
Taylor, welcome to the Cusp Show. Great to have you on. So,
thank you.
Seriously, walk us through, because I'm really intrigued in talking about the team aspect and the learnings that you experienced at the academy, and then also tell us about kind of your post-academy career, which has also been pretty interesting. So fire away.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I appreciate you having me on, and it's really weird to be on the other side of this podcast. I tune in all the time. So thank you for having me. So Mike, you were doing a really good job. I appreciated that background.
That humble military background, once again, just deflecting off to my track.
So I'm from San Diego, California. It's definitely not a traditional, hotbed, as they say, for lacrosse, but I was fortunate enough to get recruited to play lacrosse at the academy. And, really what drew me to the academy was, everything that had to do with all the midshipmen, opportunity to serve the country after college, something just a little bit different than the rest of my high school classmates were doing, going into college. So that was what kind of drew me to that, and that family aspect of the academy. So I went there for 4 years, actually did a prep school year up at Newport, Rhode Island before that. And then, played lacrosse there for 4 years and had some troubles with my shoulder, had some injuries, but got through it 4 years. And then after that, I commissioned and did my first tour out in San Diego, California, on an amphibious warship, USS San Diego. So that was really cool to go back home and be on that side of the world for me as a San Diego kid. I didn't really even know that there was a Navy community, funny enough. Wow. not a Navy family, not a military family, at all. And
tell if you but down to the harbor in San Diego, you look, there's these big gray ships in the distance.
I know. That's completely oblivious. I was completely oblivious. I saw the Fly Navy every time we flew into San Diego, and it just never even crossed my mind. But was fortunate enough to serve my first tour out there for 2.5 years. I was in charge of about 20 technicians, like a project manager role. And we were working with the electronics equipment on board, communications, radar, stuff like that. And then my other job was to drive a ship, which was pretty wild. I never thought I'd be able to do that, but I was able
Wait,
to
wait,
do
wait,
it.
wait. So what does that mean? Explain that, please.
It's about a 2-year process. You do a bunch of qualifications because they don't just give you the keys right away. But two-year process to essentially be the captain of the ship. Say the captain's sleeping in the middle of the night, they can't be up, on the bridge, 24/7. So they need somebody in charge of safe navigation of the ship and in charge of all the people that operate various systems. And I was the officer of the deck, qualified that with about 6 other people, and we were on a rotation, and that was separate from my day job as that project manager role. So it was kind of in tandem, which was cool.
So where were some of the places where that you had to navigate? Was it just around San Diego
For
Harbor?
that tour, it was just San Diego for the most part, and if you're, Coronado Island, anchoring off, right outside of Coronado Island, San Clemente Island, that AOR, and never got to go on a deployment with that ship. Unfortunately, I left right before they were on deployment, but then COVID hit. If we're being honest, it was kind of nice I wasn't on that deployment because they only went to Oman twice and for a
Wow.
9-month deployment, which would have been, I mean, that's really tough. So when I finished up that tour, I went out to Charleston, South Carolina for nuclear engineering graduate level courses. Yeah, I was selected out of the academy to do that. I was a political science major in college, so I never thought in a million years that that's something that I'd be doing, but the Navy thought that I was qualified to do it, and I went and didn't complain, and maybe complain just a little bit, but it's okay. Went and did a year of that. It's like, I don't even know how to. So it's like 6 months of actual classwork and then 6 months classwork and practical. So you're actually operating on nuclear submarine that's like a training platform.
Of course you are.
I know. 6 months in. They trust us a lot, but we have a lot of proper supervision. And once you finish that, you get qualified to go on to your next role. And from there, instead of going on submarines, I went on to an aircraft carrier. From there, I went to the USS Harry S. Truman, based out of Virginia. So I got to live in Virginia Beach for 2.5 years. And I was a main propulsion assistant, or like the assistant to the main propulsion assistant. So in charge of all the steam equipment that made the boat go, basically, is the best way I can put it, simply. And as well as operating the nuclear reactor on board.
Of
So
course. That's what I was thinking.
supervising those
I was just fixing mine
supervising
this
those.
morning, as a matter of fact. So,
Yeah, so that was kind of like, instead of driving the ship, I was just at the bottom of the ship and supervising those operations. So it was about a team of 20 at any given time, 24/7 run, and 5-hour shifts. And then when I wasn't doing that, I was in charge of about 40 nuclear train mechanics on board, doing that as like my day job. So that was a lot of fun, really tough, probably the most challenging thing I've ever done, for sure. I
Until
mean,
now, of course. So,
until now, no,
yeah.
it's working with Williams.
So just not to take this the wrong way, but so did you ever actually deploy off out of the United States? Where'd you go?
So with the Truman, we were set to go to, they call it Fifth Fleet, which is like Middle East. But right the first month in, Ukraine was invaded by Russia, as many people know. And we were already on our way out there. And so we were quickly, told, hey, you need to stay in the Mediterranean and basically be there for NATO allies. And quickly our plans changed, and we were in the Med for 9 months. It was supposed to be a 6-month deployment. We immediately got a 3-month extension right away. And then, we kind of were around the Mediterranean, going up into like the Adriatic Sea, by like Croatia, and sending planes in over Romania and different NATO allies countries, basically monitoring their airspace, making sure nothing was getting out of hand, essentially. Big deterrence
No.
aspect to it. So very proud of the work that we did there. We came back with all of our systems intact and fully operational, and which is a big ask for a 9-month deployment on an aircraft carrier that's about 30 years old. And the team did incredible, and we were able to get back safely, and nobody was hurt. No, nothing got escalated, and that's really what our job was at the end of the day.
So this traditional route to sports and business,
yeah,
I just want to kind of recap it for a second. Nuclear submarine, aircraft carrier, played sports in college, but came from a place where lacrosse wasn't that popular.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to think of like the other interesting ties that would make just a natural fit, like saying, oh yeah, you want to go sell sponsorships? You fit perfectly. Which in reality, I want to talk a little bit about that, because you actually fit better than what most people would think in team sports, given a lot of the military people with military backgrounds and training that I've seen. But so how did you get here?
Yeah, honestly, it was a very frank conversation with my wife as I was ending my tour with the Truman. I was transitioning out of the military. We knew I was going to be separating. And really what it came down to was she asked me straight up. She goes, what do you care about? Like, what do you want to do? And I was like, wow, like I've never really thought about that. I've always been kind of told what I'm going to be doing instead of like really going and pursuing something that I care about like fully. I love my time in the Navy, but it definitely wasn't something I saw as like a full career. So it was refreshing to have that opportunity to really do a career pivot. And in doing a bunch of research, I looked at MBA programs, master's programs, and, found Columbia, the sports management program, and, looked at, who's alumni, who the professors were, the curriculum, and also the timeline. Honestly, the fact that it's kind of like a choose your own adventure really was appealing to me. And applied, and fortunately got in and started like right away. I got out of the military in January and I started in January. So
wow.
it was a quick turnaround.
So when people ask you, what do you have as skills that could apply to this business? And we'll talk a little bit about Williams F1 and what you're doing now. What's kind of your elevator pitch then?
I think bottom line, I'm a quick learner. I think I've displayed that in my 5 years of service. I've been able to pick up a job pretty quickly and be able to be effective very quickly, and also lead a team almost immediately. Mm. I think that's something that I bring to the table that a lot of my counterparts in the military definitely bring to the table when they go on to civilian careers. Ability to adapt and overcome. It's cliche, but it is true. Like, you're faced with a lot of challenges in the military and just in general in life, right? And all we do is just problem solve. So really having the ability to problem solve mm-hmm. quickly, and also provide a collaborative environment, I feel like, is something that especially in nuclear engineering, like, we definitely valued every single person's opinion and ideas, and that was really special about the community. I had an 18-year-old sailor that was in charge of reactor operations in front of me. I was supervising him, but he actually had the switch, basically, to drive reactor power. And like, that is scary, but at the same time, like, I'm asking him or her, and I'm like, hey, is this safe? Is this, is this the right move? Do we need to, do something different? What do you think? Like, that's crazy to me, honestly. Like, looking back, it's insane. But, I think that's what I bring, really, is that experience. I know it's a little niche, but.
Well, it's actually not niche at all. It's actually very broad. And okay. It's funny, so like, I would imagine, when the Wi-Fi goes out, it's probably you're like, we just figured out how to fix it, as opposed to, this people pulling their hair out. So the other thing I would imagine that comes up is, everyone I've met who's been around the military is extremely efficient at time management and prioritizing. And also, the crisis side, obviously, is fairly large when you're on an, an aircraft carrier, you know, going through the Straits of Hormuz is a little bit different than saying, oh, you know, I don't know if we've sold enough tickets for today. So, great. Can you touch on a little bit about your athletic background and how that applies? Because we kind of glossed over that, but, you know, being a 4-year letter winner at a school that's done pretty well in lacrosse over the years, and also being around, you know, an academy system, and you were there, I guess, when football was doing okay. That you know, what is that like being in Annapolis and kind of the military aspect tied to the athletic aspect, and how does that all fit together?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's pretty incredible, especially if both teams are performing at a high level, which we were fortunate enough to witness and be a part of when we were there. We went to the quarterfinals of the NCAA tournament in 2016, and our football team was, I think, you know, they may have gotten even 10 wins that year. So we were both performing really well, and it was really cool because it's such a small community at the academy, and we really get to interact with everybody, all midshipmen, you know, every day, and especially the athletes, we definitely interact the most. But I guess to talk about like the military aspect with the athletic point, you know, athletics aspect, it's, you know, we were very fortunate as athletes. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. Like we, you know, there were some things that our midshipmen counterparts that weren't in athletics were doing that we were not, but it usually came, you know, because of something, right? Like we weren't doing a parade on a Saturday morning because we were traveling to Boston, you know, in the middle of the night to go play a game at Boston University. Like we were doing things, but it was just a little bit different. But to have the support from, you know, other midshipmen, you know, to have the humility too, like for as athletes to be like, hey, we're definitely in a good situation. Like we have a lot of perks and benefits as athletes at the academy, but we can't flaunt it. We have to just be like every other midshipman. Mm-hmm. We can't, you know, so that was something we tried to do every day. I mean, I hope we did a good job of it. I, you know, it's hard to tell sometimes unless somebody tells you, but that was kind of like the military and athletics aspect. We definitely participate in a lot of military things, you know, marching into the chow hall every day at 12 o'clock. We definitely did. But you know, there are some things we didn't participate in.
Hey, walk us through a day, in season, for lacrosse versus a day that's off season.
Yeah, for sure. In season. Ooh, well, early season, it would be a wake up call at about like 5. I mean, it really is as late as you can wake up before you get to the 6 a.m. gym time, but, you know, 5:30. Run over to the gym, work out at 6 o'clock, finish up about 6:45, go shower, 7 o'clock, you got breakfast, which all the midshipmen pretty much, you know, everybody's eating breakfast together, all 4,000 midshipmen at one time for each meal. You know, you have about 30 minutes to eat until you have to go to formation at like 7:30. It's been a while. So if I have the time drawn,
you can just make it up because we're not going to know anyway. So.
Yeah, exactly. So. You know, 7:30, you got formation in the morning, make sure everybody's there and muster. And then you go off to class at 8 o'clock, and 8 o'clock until about 11 o'clock, you have classes. 11 o'clock. Once you finish up, we have another workout. So we go to the gym, work out as a team, and then eat right after, so about like 12, whatever, and then you have another round of classes from, you know, 12 to 3 p.m. And while the rest of the midshipmen are doing like intramurals and stuff like that, because everybody is supposed to play a sport, whether it be intramurals or you know, varsity, we'd go to, you know, training to make sure that we're, you know, stretched out, everything like that, and then go to practice, and we'd have practice for about 3 hours. And then once practice was done, that's when we had dinner and we ate as a team, usually, because we were eating a little bit later than our counterparts in the, you know, at the academy. And then we had study hour after that once we were all said and done with meals. I forgot to add, in the middle of the day, there is a formation that's outside at T Court. And if anybody's ever been to the academy while classes are in session, it's actually pretty cool. All 4,000 midshipmen line up in formation, do roll call essentially out there, and march in together to go eat lunch. And usually the, you know, we would make a point to be there as a team, because you know you want to make sure you're with the rest of the brigade at you know all times whenever you could. So we'd go to formation and eat with our squads that were like our individual companies. So
and is it different in the off season or you're always training anyway?
Off season, we're pretty much training. There's only, I would say, other than the summers, there's maybe like a month time frame in the fall where we're not like tied to the team. Otherwise, we're doing some form of activity with the lacrosse team together to like conditioning in the fall, and then obviously in the spring we have games. So,
got it, Mike.
Yeah,
yeah. For you know, you that is a lot of stuff to have to juggle with also the schoolwork going on. But how did that help you? Because you know, people talk about the Columbia program having a rigorous curriculum and stuff mm-hmm. like that, and just
it's very similar actually. Everybody has breakfast at 7 a.m.
Yeah.
Yeah, obviously not that, but with just like the schoolwork and obviously, you know, trying to find jobs and going to internships, like how do you think that experience helps you be able to balance your time and also be able to grow yourself too, where nothing really phases you in terms of a challenge?
Yeah, I think it goes back to what Joe was saying about the effectiveness of your time management skills. And that's something we're taught from like as a plebe from, freshman year is, can you be effective in your time management? And if you're not, you're gonna sink, honestly, no pun intended, but like you're gonna I hate saying fail, but not do well. Very fortunate at the academy, there's a lot of resources, and there are also at Columbia, which is great. But really the ability to plan out your day. I love Columbia's evening classes. I don't know how the rest of the cohort feels, but the evenings, like to be able to be responsible for your day, you know, your day, whether you're working part-time, full-time, and then you can, you know, go to classes up at Columbia or, you know, if we have a remote class and be able to juggle your time, however it is that you need to get the job done. Like it's very helpful. But yeah, I don't know. I think just being effective with your time management. So just knowing when things are due, setting goals for yourself of like when you want to accomplish certain tasks. Like I plan out every single week for assignments. I'm pretty neurotic about it, but I have to in order to make sure that I stay on task.
Mike, get another one.
Yeah. That was something I was going to ask is like, you know, at the Navy, there's a lot of structure that goes into each day as you just outlined beautifully.
Yeah.
Can you talk about like, so you said you plan out your days and your assignments. Can you talk a little bit about like what you do now also in the summer to plan out your day too? Cause I mean, obviously you're working, you know, probably a rigorous schedule at Williams, but also you got other, you know, stuff to juggle there and stuff like that. Like what do you do to carry over that structure that you learned at the Navy and apply it today?
Yeah. So, right now I'm at Williams, so I'm working Monday through Thursday, really fortunate to be working in F1 and, it's about, you know, it's a 9 to 5, you know, eight hours a day, Monday through Thursday. And then I have, I'm taking, three classes. So the supervised research project with ISU, and that's a remote class, which honestly over the summer, it's really helpful to have some of the remote classes, especially if we have an internship. So on Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, doing classes 6 to 8 or 8 to 10 on Wednesdays. And, really what it comes down to is I try and get everything done Thursday, Friday. And if I have to work on Saturday, I'll work on Saturday, to make sure that like half my Saturday and my Sundays are pretty clear to spend time with my wife and explore the city and not have the stress of having the work, you know, hanging over my head that's due on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. So that's kind of my goal. Cause I know I'm not going to really be able to get it done during the day, Monday through Thursday. So.
So talking about goals, tell us a little bit more about what you're doing at Williams F1, and then what is the career path like, the what you want to do going forward? Like, what have you learned so far?
Yeah. So right now I'm doing commercial and marketing strategy, working under Ava Scheininger there for Williams. And it's kind of adjacent to the partnerships sales team, kind of helping out with them, but also like evaluating different strategies that Williams has to generate revenue, which is a really, really fun and cool aspect of the business that Williams, for people that aren't familiar with Williams, is, it doesn't have brick and mortar stores like a McLaren or an Aston Martin. So like their revenue opportunities come pretty much, solely from their sponsorships, but they have to also evaluate other ways that they can generate revenue. So that's kind of what I'm helping Ava with, and evaluating those different avenues to bring revenue to the team, and as well as like analyzing and researching across the sports industry, where they source their partnerships from, whether it be US based, UK based, or rest of the world, how they outreach, so cold, connected, or via an agency, and kind of doing that research for the team to kind of better understand how they need to take their approach. So I'm helping with all of that. And then I also have an interesting opportunity to help with their merchandise and the licensing team, evaluating their process from, negotiation to approval, and like how they streamline that aspect of the business to kind of, just make it a little bit easier on everybody. So it's pretty eclectic roles and responsibilities, but I love it because it gives me a wide range of learning opportunity, and really fortunate to have the chance to do it.
So have there been any instances where someone's in the office and said, you, the Navy guy, how would you solve this?
Well, kind of. It's only been three weeks. So actually, really with the licensing. So we're looking at the approval process, and we're, I'm taking some of the experience that I've had in my, day to day when I was in the Navy, of like, having a piece of equipment that needed to be fixed. Obviously, you're not going to just spend $1 million right away to go, to fix a piece of equipment. You need to route it, right? You have to have an approval process in place. So I'm kind of like helping develop that for Williams and make it, make it streamlined. So yeah, that kind of happened. I'm drawing a lot from my Navy experience to put that approval process in place, and creating like a organizational flow chart of how things can be more efficient.
How about going forward? So brief learnings here, but also learnings in class. So if you started to kind of figure out what you want to do, what you don't want to do, and how does that tie into all the experience that you've gathered?
Yeah. I think more and more I'm being drawn to the partnership side of the business. It's such a important aspect of the sports industry that I've learned just in my short time at Columbia. And basically I really want to be on the strategy side, but I understand that I need a little bit more experience in the partnerships, like sales and activation side first before I get to the strategy side. So really that's where I want to be, is in the partnership side. 'Cause I mean, again, why I'm doing Williams is like, to be able to affect team performance via, bringing in money, partnering with certain sponsors is so cool to me. And like, it's a very unique aspect of the business that I think also translates to other sports, probably not as like one-to-one as it is in F1, but to be able to see, what you've accomplished come to life on the field or on the track is pretty cool to have that experience.
When you look back on your experience, both as an athlete and your post athletic career in the Navy, what's one of the things that you take away saying, this is something that are going to be useful to me specifically going forward when I go into sports media entertainment business? Like, what is there something that jumps out saying, we almost sunk the sub here, and this is how I was going to take that and take out sinking sub and put in, failing ticket sales or something like that. So,
oh man, it's really hard because a lot of, if you get into specifics of things, it's not obviously a one-to-one.
I think you can say it was top secret, but that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'll say this, not to go into a long story, but, we had an opportunity to do a storytelling session at the beginning of the semester at Columbia. And for whatever reason, this story came to mind was when we were on deployment and we were heading back home. After about 9 months, we were on watch at like 1 o'clock in the morning, and all of a sudden they rung up a high bell, which means go fast and turn the ship around. And we felt it, and we're like in charge of that whole aspect. And we're like, what the heck is going on? Like, we're supposed to be going home. Like, we were pretty set on that schedule. And I got a call up from my boss. Nobody else could hear. And she was like, hey, the Admiral just came over the intercom and was like, you know, Russia's doing some things where we need to go, and we're plans are changing. Like, we're not going home at the time that we thought we were. We're going back into the, you know, the med. We're going to continue the mission. And that was pretty heavy at 1 o'clock in the morning, to obviously be told something you don't necessarily want to do.
Did you go back to sleep?
Yeah, no. I was like, I was on watch. I was on watch. I wish I could have went back to sleep. But no, I was like, I had, you know, 10 people in the room with me that I had to tell and break the news to. And it was a really challenging moment to be like, hey guys, I know everybody wants to go home. I know everybody had these plans, and I know that it's not necessarily what we had talked about, but we need to do this because people need us and this is our mission. And kind of being able to tell them, like, while this may not feel right in the moment, like, it is going to be right in the long run. And I feel like having that experience to be able to break news like that in a way to make it digestible is going to help me further on, because I'm sure there's going to be opportunities and times when I'm faced with a situation where I have to tell people, you know, that, you know, either my peers or people that work for me, not great information or not great, you know, things. And I have to be able to break that down to, you know, explain the why of why we're doing something, to help, you know, carry on and fulfill whatever mission we have in front of us. So I think that's probably the biggest thing that I'll take away.
Cool. Mike?
I would say one thing I was going to wonder for you is, you know, it seems like obviously you develop problem solving, develop those leadership through the experience in the Navy, but you had to have maybe mentors along the way. I feel like that.
You stole my question. Damn. Yeah.
So can you talk a little about the mentors that you had and, you know, what kind of wisdom they imparted on you?
Yeah. I think as early on as, you know, my high school football coach, Coach Sean Doyle, Cathedral Catholic High School, was absolutely still a mentor to this day. And he was absolutely a mentor when I was in high school, guiding everybody on the team and everybody at the school, with just words of wisdom, things from his experience, and just being, that soundboard, you know, sounding board for us. If we had to make big decisions, he was extremely instrumental in that, especially with me going to the academy. I definitely ran by him. He was like almost like a father figure to me, to a lot of people. In the Navy, Emery's Daryl was my first boss, my first immediate boss, on the ship out in San Diego. He was a Naval lacrosse player, actually, and played some varsity, played some club. And I still continue to, you know, keep up with him. He's actually a professor now at the academy. So he's molding young minds in the econ department there. And, you know, not only professional development, but personal development. Even just like, hey, I'm going to Ocean City for the weekend. Listen, what I have to deal with, you know, at home, X, Y, Z. It's nice to have somebody just to, you know, talk to in a personal way as well as a mentor. So those two people for sure have been instrumental in my growth as a person and, you know, personally and professionally.
Cool. So Taylor, we ask everybody three questions, and number one is, you know, maybe this is a little bit self-evident and you can keep it short, but like, how do you stay up to date? What do you read? What do you listen to? Yeah. The second question is, you know, especially now you know, you've gone through some pretty significant career changes, and for people who are either changing careers or just getting started, you know, what do you tell them from the learnings that you've had? And third, which is always the fun one, is, you know, figuratively or actually kind of like, what's on your shelf? Like, what's the thing that you've taken away? I'm sure there's some challenge coins sitting in the drawer somewhere too, but so those three.
I have to think about that one. All right. Sorry, I don't have my shelf right behind me. The first one, what do I keep as an update? Sports Business Journal. I mean, that's pretty, I think it's a no brainer. I think you have to have it's expensive, but it's worth it, to get up to date information on everything. And then, you know, podcasts. I listen to a lot of different a lot of different things. Don't fault me. I love part of my take. I know it's Barstool, but
it's your choice. I mean
it's how
we're not judgmental.
It's how I you know, alleviate some stress, but also kind of weirdly keep up with things going on in the world.
Sure.
With sports. And then pardon the interruption on TV. I think it's still like the all-time staple to watch. So I try and watch that as much as I can. What was the second question?
Advice.
Have an open mind, really. The thing that I've learned, I mean, I've had to have an open mind, right? I'm coming into this kind of very, very fresh, but I feel like a lot of people get very narrow-minded in terms of like where they see themselves, where they see their future. You know, I want to work for the NBA, I want to work for the MLB, but like there are other, you know, teams out there, there are other leagues out there, there's other organizations out there that you might not even realize are a part of the sports, you know, sports industry. Have that open mind. Don't shut any doors. Don't limit yourself, basically, is what I'm saying. So that's my biggest piece of advice for people, you know, of any age.
And then what's the fun little tchotchka takeaways that you've kind of accumulated over the years?
Okay. So I'll just go with one, cause I have a ton of challenge coins, just accumulating over the years of, you know, being in the military. People love giving out challenge coins. The challenge coin is, it's like it's a personalized coin from somebody that they give you. Usually it's after a job well done for something, or it's a, you know, if they meet you, it's, you know, admirals love giving them out, but I got one from my captain.
I have six actually.
Yeah, exactly. They love it. I got one on my last ship on the Truman from the captain of the Truman. When I passed my nuclear engineering exam, which is like a two month extensive, like, written and oral examination down at naval reactors, got a shout out on the, you know, ship wide announcing circuit, you know, with me and my other, the other, officer with me that passed and gave me a coin after the fact. And it was pretty cool, cause you know, he's the captain of an aircraft carrier, and, you know, he took time out of his day to say congratulations and, you know, shook my hand and it meant a lot, honestly, because I know what he had to deal with on a daily, on the daily. So for him to take time out of his busy day to say congratulations to me meant a lot. So.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Cool. Mike, you want to kind of wrap us up and take us on to the next step?
Sure. Well, for everyone listening, we had Taylor Rizzoldi on the podcast today, and it was great listening to him about his story in the Navy and what he's doing now at Williams and at Columbia. So, Taylor, first of all, it's always good to talk to you. Good to see you, and thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate it.
Cool. Once again, you know, this is actually really interesting learning. And first of all, I didn't say at the beginning, but thank you for your service, Taylor, because it's really important and very much underappreciated. You've been listening to The Cusp Show, another special edition with learnings from some of our students who've had experiences way beyond what most people would consider traditional for this business. Our guest has been Taylor Rizzoldi, Navy veteran, lacrosse player, now working in, of course, the natural transition to Williams F1. And we'll see where it goes from here. But once again, I'm Joe Favorito. For Mike Shredder, sitting in for our regular co-host, Tom Richardson, we will see you down the road.